You know, I get asked all the time, what's the best way to start your own podcast? Well, I mean, there's many ways you can tackle this, but one of the things that's made it really simple for me is an app called Descript. It's simple, it's collaborative, it's an audio video editor that turns your audio into text so you can edit it easily. Think of it kind of like using Google Docs or Microsoft Word. There's both automatic and manual transcription options. It's super fast, accurate, and affordable. It's a tool we use for Loveless Fear and Loveless Fridays. It keeps everything running smoothly. Whether you're an editor, producer, host, writer, it is perfect for editing sound files and even lyrics. If you're ready to let your voice be heard, want to support Loveless Fear and Loveless Fridays, just hit the link in the show notes under Descript. Thank you always for listening, sharing, and supporting. Disclaimer: the information shared on this podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only. It should not be considered as professional advice or a substitute for seeking professional advice.
It's so funny being in this position, like writing romances. Sometimes I just don't feel like I'm an expert in it.
To be honest. Who is though? I mean, everybody claims to be an expert. Right. How many degrees do you need to become an expert truly in love?
I think the hardest thing afterwards, and oh my God, I'm going to cry. It was a handful of friends of mine who were like, how did you not see it coming? And that like broke my heart, because I think so many victims or so many people who get in these relationships don't see it coming. That's another thing they told me early on with Lifetime and Hallmark. They're like, look, you can reintroduce characters multiple times. You can be redundant because people are changing the laundry. They're answering the door to get a package. They're online shopping. You know, like this is some low stakes, low grade cinema.
Way to endorse yourself.
I know. Yeah. I used to really dictate a lot of my relationships by who's the most fun.
Who's the most popular guy in this room? You? We're going to date.
I'm like, okay, great. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's do it.
My body went into survival mode where I was like, you have to find a way to get away from this guy. He's way bigger than you. He's going to try to kill you if you leave. And I remember after I was safely away from him, feeling this like rush of relief. Finally, tears came because I was no longer in survivor mode. I'm writing this down.
Definitely. Well, for you know that's going to become another movie. I hope you know this.
I'll name him Jake.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Please do name him Jake. Yeah, that'd be great. You can take full credit for that. I'm Jake Deptula, and this is Loveless Fridays. Here we delve deeper into the topics, themes, and stories featured on Loveless Fear. Today, I'm excited to welcome Jenna, who shared her story in Loveless Fear, Episode 6, No One Gets Out This Early. While working as a rising comedian, Jenna fell for a tall, charismatic chef and quickly married him within 3 months. What seemed like a whirlwind romance soon became a nightmare as she found herself trapped in an abusive marriage with a volatile man who used his knives to control and threaten her. Rushing into the relationship, Jenna missed the warning signs. Isolated and abused, she became a target for his rage. With the help of her family and domestic abuse specialists, Jenna escaped. Despite her ordeal, she continues to believe in real love. Let's listen to a clip from Jenna's episode.
I was instantly taken with this man. I would go into his restaurant every night and, you know, sit at the chef's counter and kiss him in between, whatever. It was so romantic. We decided to move in together. I knew this was moving really fast, and I wanted it to. 3 months in, after meeting, we're getting married. He told me that his visa had expired. He's like, well, now that we're married, I can stay in the country. He took my phone and deleted a bunch of my male friends' contacts from it. And he's like, now that you're married, it's not appropriate to have male friends. He would try to find any little thing to start a fight. And he like kind of held the knife and like gave me this menacing look that I fucking put chills down my spine. And the window was open and I just jumped out. And he was calling me, blowing up my phone, saying like, you better come home now or I'll kill myself and you have to deal with the body, or I'll kill you if you don't come home. So more cops are showing up. And he tells my dad that usually they take stories like this, like from a hospital bed. He's like, no one gets out this early.
Jenna, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back.
Of course. I'm so glad you're here.
Absolutely. I heard our chat before.
For you, was it hard to share your story?
It was. It took me a long time to figure out how to talk about it and even to get the language and wrap my head around the fact that I went through that, because it was such a unique experience. And there's so much out there, you know, especially now, like
I mean, I'm not an expert in the Gabby Petito stuff, but sometimes I'll see stuff on Instagram and it's some specific line. I'll still get little triggers and stuff like that. And that episode dropped in May of 2024 on the same day of I had a first date with the guy I'm still dating now. And I remember seeing it on my phone and being like, okay, yeah, that's right. This is going out into the world. And I didn't even tell him about it for months because it's hard to bring up. I don't know if that makes sense. It is hard to talk about.
Well, it does. It makes a lot of sense. Did you share it with friends and family? And if so, what was their reaction?
Their reaction was sad and surprised. I think they were like, I can't believe this is what you went through. Because when we got into like the nitty gritty of what was happening in the day to day, and it was such a potent time, it all really happened within like 2 months. People were shocked. Yeah.
Did this experience have a major impact on how you view men and future relationships, considering you just got into one recently?
That's come up a lot too. I've had friends ask me like, how can you date again? Like, how do you even open yourself up to relationships after going through that? And I think it was that the same thing that saved me was that I remember being like, this isn't love. I was able to distinguish between the two. And I think that, I mean, honestly, my own relationship with my dad is really healthy. I've had long-term relationships that did not have elements of abuse or control or the manipulation or like the verbal abuse, especially not even just the physical stuff, but the verbal abuse. And that's what was really ramping up to when it got more physical, when like the knives were coming out when he was chasing me. And I just, honestly, I don't know what in my mind was like, I believe in love, but here I am writing Hallmark romantic comedies as a career. I just had my 6th movie shoot this last winter. I'm working on my 7th. And I guess I just had to believe that it was an isolated incident, even though we know statistically they are not isolated. Like there are millions of people who get into abusive relationships. But now seeing the red flags in hindsight, I do know what to look for. But I also know how I contributed to it. There was a lot that I didn't know about this guy. Like I moved in with him very quickly. I didn't know that his visa expired and that might have motivated him wanting to get married really fast. So not saying I now only date guys with papers, but kind of do, you know?
It's interesting you say that. I mean, your marriage started out like a Hallmark movie, but turned into a Lifetime movie, technically.
Absolutely. It started off so much like a Hallmark movie, you know, like, oh, this chef was so romantic, all the love bombing. Yeah. That was something that I know to look out for now.
What I think is so fascinating about this is that you have not let your traumatic or negative or destructive situation define your art. You've actually gone a 180. You haven't had to tap into that at this point, and you've gone a totally different direction. So I think that's really fascinating that you were able to do that and really move on and get into not only a healthy relationship professionally, but personally as well.
Thank you for saying that, because it was not easy, I think. And it's, I don't know if it's an element of, yeah, I didn't want it to define me or kind of color how I saw each potential romantic situation. Because we all bring things from the past. We all bring stuff because it changes us. Every relationship I've been in, there's something that I learned about myself or that the other person that I either liked or really didn't like and didn't want in the future. And I think if I thought every man had the potential to be like that, I think I would be single for the rest of my life going through that.
We all know that you're a funny person. That's clear from this conversation and some of our past conversations. So you know a little bit about comedy. Wouldn't you say that might be appropriate? And
yeah.
Our producer, Haley, is a huge improv comedy fan. Before this session, we had talked about this, and I do want to apologize, Haley. I'm not going to call you out here, but Haley is recovering. So her voice is a little bit different. She's not channeling Demi Moore for the Academy Award weekend, but she's going to sound a little bit different. But Haley, I would love you to probe Jenna about some of her comedy background. Let's get into a little bit about Jenna.
I would love to know what made you want to go into improv comedy as opposed to stand-up or comedy writing for TV shows and things like that.
Yeah. I got into it because I loved making my friends laugh. When I was a kid, I was such a clown and I got so much positive feedback I can't memorize lines. And so I was like, either you become an actress or you become an improv comic. I was like, oh, this exists? Perfect. You just show up and it's very collaborative and really fun. And I started doing comedy sports in Portland during college and really found just so much joy from it. It's so fun being on stage and it's a thrill. It's terrifying. I've done stand-up also, and I like that too. I like the idea of writing a joke and then getting on stage and seeing if it's funny. But I really gravitated towards improv because, I mean, you know that feeling of being like at a UCB show and you're witnessing this magic and it's the epitome of you had to be there. You can't even describe it after the show. You know, you kind of black out on stage, the audience is there, and you just experience this magical little moment. And I think I just got hooked on that. I think when I started getting more into storytelling and stuff and podcasts, I was always doing funny material. But I remember, I mean, not to go super full loop, but after I got married, I remember my first husband. That was a big red flag because I went to do a show at UCB, a comedy storytelling show. And it was some sort of, you know, like hijinks about dating and some guy. And he was like, well, now that you're married, you can't talk about other guys on stage. I remember being like, what? Like, oh, I didn't know that this was going to be an issue, you know? And so I remember that never coming up in the past in romantic relationships. That was one thing that actually was unnerving at first. I was like, oh, this guy thinks he can control my comedy career, or that he has some sort of say in it. And I was never disrespectful. I would never get on stage and tell anything that I felt was disrespectful to that partner at the time. That's just not my brand of comedy. Like, I was honestly terrified. I was like, what is this going to do for my career if my husband isn't supportive of me? And I was doing some comedy writing at the time, and I got really, really kind of worried that this was not the right partner for me. I remember I was in improv classes and performing at the time, and I remember there was this one specific night, and he was yelling at me all night, and it was nonsense, because that's what happens a lot of times. They start on one thing, and then all of a sudden, they're yelling at you about something else. And I remember watching the sunrise, and I had to go do improv at 10 a.m. I had an improv class, and I was like, oh my God, I haven't slept. I have to go be funny. I remember asking him, like, what is this even about? Like, what are you really mad about? That's what they do. You're confused, you're gaslit. But at the time, I didn't know that's what it was. But I remember thinking, how can I go be funny when my personal life is a nightmare? It was the worst feeling, like having to go, you try to muster up some sort of energy or some sort of care when my heart was just like broken. I was just so empty and so like wondering, how am I going to get out of this? How can I do the thing I love to do? And the thing that, I mean, at the time really defined me. My whole identity was comedy, pursuing comedy and writing. And that was my whole social circle and doing shows every night. And then I go home and I was living with this like monster. It was the worst time of my life, for sure.
If you could talk to your younger self, what advice would you give about love, relationships, and self-worth?
Oh, yeah. That is a great question. I think it would be, don't be afraid of like showing up exactly how you are. And always keep like the romance fun and fresh and alive. Don't worry too much about the outcome. Kind of just detach from the outcome of it and stay present. That's one thing about getting married. I remember right after we got married in Vegas, I felt different. I always wanted to be in just like one relationship. I've always dreamt of that. You know, my parents met and married in college. And I think in the back of my head, I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to find that guy. I'm going to get married and it's going to go great. I didn't really worry too much about how it would pan out. I just thought it was going to all be fine. And I remember getting married and being like, oh yes, I'm done. I'm done dating. I don't have to start fresh anymore. I was excited to feel what it would be like to be a wife, genuinely. And it happened so quickly that I still don't know what that feels like. So when people are like, oh, you've been married before. And I was like, yeah, but I didn't have time to feel what it would be like to be someone's wife or to have a husband or to be in that kind of relationship where you're in it, you're committed. And I remember I was fully in my heart committed. And I think that was devastating to then have that just blow up in my face. I really went into it with such a pure heart and was so excited to experience that type of relationship. And I still am. I still hope to. I would still love to experience what it's like to be married. I think that could have been quenched, washed out after going for it that time and having it backfire. But I still think that that's something that I want to experience in my time on earth. I know it sounds so cheesy, but I like love monogamy. I love the idea that like you have your one person and you're just figuring it out. And I think that's why I love the Hallmark movies, because I love writing douche lawyer ex-boyfriend, or like at the start of the movie, she's dating ex-lawyer. Like it's terrible. I'm like, whatever. Sorry, lawyers. I love you guys, but like you're the douchebag she's going to dump. But they don't really have many hangups. They're very pure going into it. They're almost like virginal. Like I always write my leading men that like he's just been too busy also with his career. He's never been in love before, that kind of thing. And I know that's not real. That's not reality. We all have a past. And I think that comes up in relationships where someone has an ex. Like I have exes and that person does too. And the older you get and you're finding love again, being able to show up with a pure heart is a challenge to not let stuff past dictate how you show up with this new person.
You mentioned this too, the fact that you didn't need to prepare for love or prepare for a relationship. It's understood that we have to prepare for a career or a job or something that we want to pursue professionally. But when it comes to romance, love, dating, setting up boundaries within the context of a relationship, most of the time we're not really taught that, and we only seek it out after we've gone through some, let's say, devastating or tragic situation. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And for you, especially as a writer and someone who writes movies about, let's say, delayed gratification or things that people have put to the side, how would you tell people to prepare for love, prepare for relationship, prepare for things, and how can they be a little bit more informed when it comes to giving their heart to someone?
Probably have an idea of what you want. What you want it to feel like, and also how that person makes you feel. Like when you part ways, do you feel drained or do you feel filled up? That's some advice that was given to me a long time ago. And it's really true. Are you drained? Because I was drained in that first marriage. I remember feeling this emptiness I never felt before, a numbness, a complete lack of self-worth. And now when I approach dating and relationships, I'm like, how do I feel? Do I feel safe in this person's presence? Do I feel like I'm emotionally safe and physically safe? And you're right. I never would have thought about until going through that. My grandma and I were very close. She passed away when I was in college, and I was actually with her the day she passed. The last thing she told me was, be picky with your boyfriends and it pays to drive safe. And I was like, 20 years old. And I was like, there's got to be a reason she told me that. She's lived a long life. But being picky with your boyfriends isn't a bad thing. Being picky with who you spend time with is huge. It's so funny being in this position, like writing romances. And I sometimes just don't feel like I'm an expert in it.
To be honest. Who is though? I mean, everybody claims to be an expert. Right? How many degrees do you need to become an expert truly in love? There are so many people running around doing podcasts, writing books, dispatching all this advice. But at the end of the day, Haley and I have talked about this too. You don't really know until you're like in it. You know what I'm saying? You don't really know until you're in the sort of center of the situation. And I think that you can only do as much as you can with the information that you have, right?
100%.
And, you know, we know matters of the heart. I mean, this is one of the reasons why we're all three here is because we've all been in situations where we've given over our heart to someone and they've exploited it or they've turned it into a traumatic situation for us, unfortunately. So I even think, you know, from that standpoint, you look at this and I really wish there was a way that when people are, you know, younger people are coming up, that there was some sort of guide to kind of understanding how to reinforce one's boundaries and be able to, you know, impart that. I mean, you said you were like 20 and you get this advice about being picky with men and your boyfriends, but that can take a lot of different forms, to be fair. Like picky to you could mean, I'm not going to date a guy under 6 feet tall, picky to other people means I'm only going to date a guy who treats me well. You know what I'm saying? Like it really depends on what are your boundaries? What are your expectations for this? What do you think you deserve? Because if you can't respect your own time, who else is going to respect it? If you don't respect yourself, who's going to respect you?
Absolutely. But I really look at every potential romantic situation. You know, I'm like, okay, if this doesn't work out, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to be all right. I'm going to figure it out. I'm happy also being by myself. I think that's another thing. I'm fine alone. And so I think that's helped as I've grown and been in more romantic relationships. It's okay if this isn't my be all end all. If this isn't my person, I'm going to be okay. You know? And I genuinely believe that.
The separation between alone and lonely is vast. And yeah. I think that more people should be comfortable being alone. And I think that during the beginning and the first leg of the pandemic, I think it really forced people to take a hard look at themselves, their own lives, and really realize, I hope that most people got out of that, like, what's important to them? You know, what are priorities, especially when it comes to matters of the heart and bottom line, who you want to spend your time with? Because I get frustrated with myself. I can't imagine someone not being frustrated with me sometime during the day, right? It's like you can't, I get bored with myself, right? I'm in that position. I'm like, how am I supposed to keep someone entertained, or how are they supposed to keep me entertained 24/7? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like living with a partner and things like that. So now both of you can attest to that since you're both in relationships, Jenna and Haley. The fact that you actually write Hallmark movies is pretty incredible. How often do you use scenarios from your own life in your movie scripts?
Oh, that's a great question. Actually, decently often. Yeah, I pull some stuff from my real life or real conversations or romantic moments. Because that's the thing with Hallmark movies. If there's a casual misunderstanding, or that's usually what it is. Like someone overhears something, thinks they mean something else, and then you have to clear it up later. And so I think there's an element of the fantasy. It's aspirational and it's a fantasy where everyone's really pure in the Hallmark world. No one's really has baggage. So I'm writing sort of a fantasy version. That's why those movies are so great, because you're like, oh yeah, what if you are just doing your career? Everything's going great. And then you meet this small town guy who has a heart of gold. I do pull from my own life, my own romance, and writing a lot of the scenes. My boyfriend, even the other day, I'm working on this one, and I was like, hey, can we workshop this? And he was giving me some great lines, and I was like, I'm going to use this.
As we're exploring dating relationships, what should someone be in store for dating a comedian or a writer who may be using the material for their scripts from the relationship?
I think it's come up as a challenge for us, because sometimes if we'll ever get into like a disagreement about something and he's like, okay, well, you're trying to write the Hallmark version of this. And I'm like, oh, why? Like, I think I do it without even knowing.
Yeah.
And so it's a challenge, because I know I want a happy ending and I know how to write that. And I know that it doesn't always come together like they do in my stories, where everyone's just ready to commit and that everything's fine. There's no problems.
What are some of the movies you've done?
Yeah, I've done The Perfect Wedding Match, which shot and aired during COVID. That was one of my favorite scripts I've ever written. I think you can still find it on streaming or YouTube or something. But the idea was that the woman, the lead, started a dating app called Plus Ones. So it just matches you with Plus Ones for wedding season in the summer.
That's a brilliant idea, actually. I can see that getting traction. Yeah.
I know, I pitched, well, I used to date this guy who started Uber, and I was like, hey, I got another app idea. Good, you know. And so, of course, the lead guy works for the San Francisco Chronicle and writes this hit piece being like, there's no way dating app algorithms can work. And so he goes undercover, joins the app, and is matched with her for her sister's wedding weekend. So silly. And so it's, of course, it's adorable. And then I wrote called The Christmas Pairing. That's actually, they shot it for Hallmark, but it's on Amazon and Peacock. So you can still watch it, which is great.
Oh, that's great.
And one shoot last summer called Love on Lookout Lake that'll be out this spring. And then another one this December in New Mexico they shot called The Spirit of Christmas Station. That'll come out again next Christmas on Hallmark, Spirit of Christmas.
Okay, we talked about this before, I think. I produce Christmas movies, right? I used to do that before this. One of the weirdest things ever, and I think we might have touched upon this before the episode, is when you're shooting a Christmas movie in July and how odd it is when you're walking through these winter wonderlands and you're going to these houses and everybody's in sweaters and it's like, you know, 92 degrees in LA. And so, you know, the pressure and the sort of high energy and sort of very stringent deadlines that these movies have, right? They're very quick turnarounds.
I'm on one now.
I mean, we're talking sometimes I've done some in less than like 2 weeks.
Yes.
That's a really quick turnaround. For anyone who doesn't know about film production, most major films easily do over 6 weeks, 8 weeks in production easily. But these are very quick turnaround. But then you see the sort of volume that Hallmark Channel has for these movies. And, you know, when Christmas season comes out, I mean, they'll drop 100 movies easily.
Oh, yeah. And people clown on them. I've never been in a room or in a conversation where someone doesn't love Hallmark movies. Or they're like, oh my gosh, I got to call my mom. Oh, my aunt has those. Oh, my wife. Everyone is touched, I think, by Hallmark and Lifetime.
There's only two ways I know Christmas is coming up. One is Starbucks, and then the second is Hallmark movies. That's it.
Yeah. But yeah, it is a quick turnaround. But I don't know why I'm just now making this connection. In Perfect Christmas Pairing, the lead girl is a chef, which is just really,
really interesting.
During COVID, I was binging Chef's Table. You know that show on Netflix?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, after this experience too, I mean, in our conversation in that episode, I talked about going to a restaurant and how romantic and sexy that was to like go, you know, sit by the open kitchen and our first date, he made me that pasta that I think, isn't it Jon Favreau makes Scarlett Johansson in Chef?
I think we talked about that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I remember just food is so seductive. It's so sexy. I remember people being like, oh my God, you married a chef. And I remember being so proud of that. But then it turned the other way where it was like, oh shoot, he has a bunch of knives around the house. Dating a chef went quickly from romantic to, oh no, I'm in a dangerous situation. I remember one night when he was like super pissed, he laid out the knives and I was like, oh shit, this guy has weapons in the house.
You literally just pitched your own Lifetime movie there. Because you're able to use the best elements and the best sort of archetypes using things like food, things like, you know, culinary skills and adapt those to positive experiences in that way. Very seldom do these things start out dangerous or dark or sort of foreboding, basically. It's great that you're sort of making this recovery circle, that you're able to use some of the best things of that scenario and apply those. But that begs the question, do you ever think you might turn that into a Lifetime movie, your experiences?
I would love to be honest. I really would like to. Yeah, because right now, I think almost every Hallmark movie I write has some, the one I'm writing now starts off with a chef. The sommelier is the lead girl and she's doing a consultation pairing and the chef is from another land, you know? And so I guess he does still sit somewhere in my romantic subconscious. I can pull from that first part of our relationship that was really romantic and aspirational. And I would like to write it. I mean, you're right. It would be a Lifetime horror movie.
100%.
But it's pull from all that real stuff that I experienced, the love bombing, the exoticness of it, how seductive it was. And it is very cinematic, unfortunately. It really is. But I think that's why, you know, I felt comfortable writing the lead girl as a chef, because I could use the little like, oh, behind, oh, the chef banter, the things they do in the kitchen. And almost, yeah, I think spin it into a positive.
Well, and that's the thing too, is like you look at it from that standpoint. If I were to create a movie like this, it would kind of be based upon the transition of someone who, for lack of a better term, lived through a Lifetime movie, but end up writing Hallmark movies. Because right, that's literally what that is. You know, it's almost like you'd probably see this in a miniseries where like a novel writer would live out his or her own fantasies, right? And they would turn dark and disturbing. However, this is a flip on that, where you've gone through that experience first and then you've made something really positive out of it. And you're actually doing something that's influencing and sort of promoting and projecting the positivity of romance through the new movies you're doing, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's funny. I got married 12 years ago. And I honestly never could have predicted that my career would unfold this way. But I just love romantic comedies and that whole genre, because you really can just tune out everything that's going bad in the world or every fight. And I think in my heart of hearts, I really just want it to be that easy. You know, yeah. Like I don't know if I'm alone, you know, where you just want that Hallmark sweetness where it's like witty banter back and forth and it's fun and it's light. And I think I Married a Monster would be a great title for the Lifetime version, because I honestly would probably write it very true to what happened. Because I think the more I talk about it over the years, like, and our conversation was so great because I got to get into more of the, like, kind of the minutia of how it unfolded and how those little things started popping up. Because that was a big thing. I think the hardest thing afterwards, and oh my God, I'm going to cry, was a handful of friends of mine who were like, how did you not see it coming? And that, like, broke my heart, because I think so many victims or so many people who get in these relationships don't see it coming, because, like, honestly, you just don't. They're so good at what they do. Like, he was a master manipulator. He knew what he was doing at every turn. Kept me in the dark about certain stuff, you know, like his visa expiring, for example, or that his grandma was abused by his grandpa and that dad abused mom, that he grew up in isolation. All these things that he never told me, and until it was too late, until we were already married, and that he had grown up in an abusive culture in Caracas in Venezuela. That's where he grew up. And that was so far removed from how I grew up. And my family culture didn't have abuse like that. And so it was quite literally like a foreign thing to me. So when people ask, like, how do you not see it coming? I'm like, well, I had no framework. I had no, honestly, vocabulary. I remember Googling when we're still married, how do you know if you're in an abusive relationship? I was at work. I was a celebrity nanny. And I had 9 out of 10 on this Google list that popped up. And I remember being like, oh no, these are all things. You know, like one of them was like financial control. This is another thing. He quit his job right after we got back from our honeymoon. So all of a sudden, he wasn't this sexy executive chef anymore. He was depending on me financially. And I didn't know that that was one of the ways they can control you, is through your finances. You know, and he had access to all my bank accounts because we were married. And I didn't think that was weird. I was like, sure, like, we're married, we can have common, whatever. Totally unaware that he was going to just drain me financially. He quit his job and then just, I got drained. That was hard to come back from.
You have become a survivor in so many ways. And again, you have now thrived through a new career. Did you anticipate that you would become a writer and start writing these movies?
I honestly didn't. Especially being in the improv world. I loved performing. That was very much what I thought I was going to be doing in the long term. And I remember right after this happened, I was hosting a show at the Hollywood Improv. And I was, of course, still doing UCB stuff. And I remember showing his picture to the bouncer. I remember being afraid to promote my shows. This is after I got out. I was afraid to perform because I was afraid he's going to show up and kill me at one of my shows. It was a very real fear. And for the first year, I would text my dad and my brother after I got back home from a show. I'd text them like, hey, I'm going out to a show. I'll text you when I get home. And for a year, I did that because I was so afraid that he was going to find me. So I either wouldn't promote a show and just go drop in and try to do it. I don't know if I've ever told anyone this, but I had one friend that was keeping tabs on him on Facebook, on his whereabouts, because he was still in LA. And I was going to go do The Moth. It turned out he got a new chef gig at the restaurant it was at. And so my friend messaged me and he was like, don't go do the show. He's the chef at this restaurant. And I was like, oh my God, if you want to told me, I would have shown up at this restaurant. It was a Spanish place on the east side of LA and maybe run into him. That's terrifying. Gosh, this is so weird to realize in real time. So I'm glad you asked this, but I think writing was safe. It was safe. I could do it from my house. I didn't have to put myself in any physical danger to tell stories. So I remember meeting a Lifetime exec and he was like, hey, do you want to come in and pitch some ideas? And so I remember going in to the office. This was back when you could pitch in person, pitching 4 ideas, and they bought one. And that changed my whole trajectory because it's called Killer Twin, which I love. I sold it as a title of The Deadly Double, but they changed it to Killer Twin. And I just rewatched it. It is so good. Lindsay Hartley's the star of it. And I remember doing a stand-up show and inviting the producer and his wife. And he came and he was like, oh, I didn't know you were funny. Do you want to write on our Hallmark side? And I was like, yes, I would love to write on your Hallmark. That's how it happened. Like through stand-up performing, I got in that way. So I pitched a couple Hallmark ideas and they optioned one. And so I've been doing that ever since. And I miss performing and still love UCB and love that whole scene. But my trajectory has gone the other way where I've just found so much joy in the delayed gratification, which the irony of that, because improv is instant gratification. And I was addicted to that. It was like a dopamine hit in real time. And now I get to write this thing and my boyfriend will laugh at me because I'm sitting on the couch just making myself power laugh. I'm like, this is so cheesy. It's so like, I love writing stuff because it's so fun writing like the banter back and forth and them ribbing each other because they love that little like witty banter between the two. And he's like, it's so funny that you can crack yourself up.
Do you ever get into a situation, maybe a conflict with your current boyfriend and he looks to your movies in order how to solve the conflict?
Yeah, I think it's come up a couple of times because I'm so hardwired to navigate how to resolve conflict quickly. Because in Hallmark movies, it's just little misunderstandings. And so I'm like, well, I think this is just like a misunderstanding. And he's like, this is not Hallmark. <I'm> like,
I knew that was going to be the case. I absolutely knew that the DNA for your relationship is implanted into your movies. I knew it.
It absolutely is. It is. There's shades of me in all these characters. It's always this little thing where, you know, they called it the act one goal, mm-hmm. whether it's to get a Michelin star, for example, that was her act one goal. And then she meets this worldly travel writer. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh, there's so much more of the world to see. You know, of course, my current boyfriend, he's a wildlife photographer. Mm-hmm. And so I've gone all around the world with him already in a short amount of time. And we're going to Greenland next. And then the Arctic, we're going to look at polar bears. He's like a Hallmark leading man. You know, he has a ranch in Montana. So we go spend a lot of time out there.
Incredible. Wow. Yeah.
Right. A ranch romance just based on our relationship. You know,
I mean, I'm thinking on a producing level, you're talking tax write-offs here. I mean, you really need to take advantage of that. I think the wildlife photographer, the travel aspect. I mean, there's so many opportunities for that. Basically, how it happens is that she somehow gets into his laptop and then sees the beautiful images of her that he's taken or how she's not enjoying any of her travel. And he captures the fact that she's really in all these cool places, but really not taking full advantage of it. And she starts to realize that he's really capturing a side of me that I need to change or something like that. You know, there's so many, I mean, we can come up and pitch like 10 different scenarios for this, but when you just pitch wildlife photographer and
during COVID, actually, during lockdown, I pitched that because Hallmark, especially, were like, we need limited locations, limited cast. And so I came up with an idea that a wildlife photographer runs their kayak aground at a lighthouse. And I'm like, two characters. The girl runs the lighthouse. And then but they were like, that's a little, you know, weird.
it's confining. I'll tell you that. But I feel that's a little more lifetimey than Hallmark, to be fair. Like I would definitely turn that into a horror movie quicker than I would turn it into a romance.
Yeah. And I think maybe why I love the Hallmark tropes is because it's always a career woman. I identify with that because I always knew from like, I think age 10 that I wanted a career in comedy. I wanted to do something in entertainment. And I never really thought about, getting married and having kids and a family to the point where I remember I hired a life coach. I moved to New York. I was doing UCB. And she was like, I want you to write down all your goals for the next, you know, 5, 10, 20 years. And so I went home and I'm like, okay, I want to do, you know, write for TV. I want to do all this. And I was in my early 20s and I remember bringing it back to her and she was like, this is great, but it's all career stuff. Where's anything about romance or relationships? And I remember telling her, I was like, well, I don't feel like that's anything you can control. I can control where my career goes. I can control how I show up professionally and my own success. And I think that's what Hallmark is. I feel like that's the kind of leading ladies that dominate those stories. It's a woman who has career ambitions and has kind of put family on the back burner, has put the idea of romance on the back burner. And I can completely identify with
it. Well, you have to have that because, I mean, otherwise, if you look at it from the standpoint, the kind of movies that Hallmark will cover when it comes to like a marriage or relationship, it's usually there's a struggle in the relationship and somebody's got, it's almost like It's a Wonderful Lifestyle trope, right? In terms of this, like, you don't know how good you got it, right? And that's the number one. Number two, yeah, which is probably the most popular scenario, as you mentioned, is the one where someone has literally just pacified their gratification far too long. And so they really need to become a fish out of water. They need to turn into someone who really opens their eyes and their heart to love. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
And yeah, there is no shortage of people who want to embrace and ingest this content because we all want to believe in love, whether we believe in it or not. And I think that there's something exciting about the unknown destiny of where our hearts are going to take us, right? Mm-hmm. They build a cottage industry on this, but even on a holiday level, like, why do you think, honestly, and you're a writer, so I want to keep you working, but why is there such a unquenchable hunger for Christmas content?
I think it's because you can really turn off your analytical brain. You can turn off whatever is sort of like either going on in your own relationship or with conflicts with loved ones, with work, whatever's going on, even the news. And it's so joyful. It's like the idea that it can be this simple, I think, is a dream. And you get to kind of exist in that. It's kind of like what happens with Nancy Meyers movies. You look at this and you're like, oh, I want to exist in this reality. And that's the thing with Hallmark Christmas movies. That's a rule. They're like, we need garlands and, you know, wreaths in every single shot.
100%. I mean, production design is so much a part of the budget of these things.
Oh, yeah. It's like you just, it's a feast for the eyes. And I think this is just a generality, but Christmas is such a joyful time.
Hopefully for most people.
Hopefully for most people that it's like escapism. That's what it feels like to me. It just feels like an escape into this thing for 90 minutes. And that's another thing they told me early on with Lifetime and Hallmark. They're like, look, you can reintroduce characters multiple times. You can be redundant because people are changing the laundry. They're answering the door to get a package. They're online shopping. You know, like this is some low stakes, low grade cinema.
Way to endorse yourself.
I know. Yeah. You don't have to really go too deep. You can kind of touch on these themes, you know, and themes that always, that I gravitate to. I think a pattern of mine is a leading lady who's got this career goal. And so no time for love, no time for romance, but that she learns that you can have both and finding ways that you can have both. I talked before about like the act one goal is this one thing, but then by act three, towards the end of the movie, she's realizing, oh wait, I can be fulfilled in my life, but also have room for romance. It doesn't have to be two separate things. It can morph into this thing. And I mean, to be honest, that's what's so funny about dating this, you know, world traveler explorer man is that I can write from anywhere. I'll just open up my laptop and I write well on airplanes. My life has turned into a Hallmark movie. People, they're like, Jenna, you're living in one. I was like, I know. I was like, this is weird. We went to Alaska to look at bears. And I remember just being like, this is so fun being out in the middle of nowhere in nature and getting so inspired. But then I can work from anywhere. It's so fun meeting people who really love Hallmark movies. It's always people you'd never expect because everyone, I think, likes them. I think what it is also, you can turn it on and not worry if like grandma's in the room or kids, because there's nothing raunchy. There's no sex stuff. There's no real drama. There's no real problems. And so you can watch it with the whole family. That's one thing that I think why people also put them on and just leave the channel on. Because you're like, okay, what sort of Christmas wonderland is this thing? You know, and decorate and make cookies and stuff. And that, because nothing's more awkward than watching a movie with your family and there's a sex scene. I remember that. Like, that's so awkward.
I remember those days. We'd rent movies from the store, right? And bring them home and watch them with my dad and my sister, my grandma. And it would be like scenes where we're watching like a detective story and they go into a strip club or something like that. It's like you're sitting there watching it, cringe. You're just cringing and seeping down. Or like, I remember my grandma was picking me up. And I remember when I Want Your Sex came on the radio for the first time. And she was just completely disgusted at the decline of Western civilization in that moment. It was so awful. It's like,
yeah.
I was like, sorry, grandma. You know, it's interesting because the level of comfort that people get from the Hallmark content and they just absorb it. And I think that it's, you know, it's just fascinating how many ways you can go with this. And it sounds like you use a ton of things from your real life in these stories. Do you ever think you'll write books? Do you ever think you'll write, you know, anything like that?
Yeah, definitely books. Yeah. That's something that is on my radar. I would love to, because I love romance. I love romance novels, those like summer ones. It's basically like Hallmark in a book. I love those. That would be a next thing that I would like to do for sure. But what I like about Hallmark is that you're right. It's a machine. You can crank these out and they keep making them. And so I'm like, I guess I'll just keep doing this. But I think I do run into the thing where finding original ways to kind of touch on the same themes, like keeping it fresh, keeping it current, keeping it original so that I don't just fall back on similar things. Like that's what I...
That's hard.
It's so hard. It is hard. But finding fresh ways to have a career woman be open to love is not easy.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
What's interesting too is that you have expanded your artistic endeavors also into podcasting. So for anyone listening who may want to listen to some of your earlier works, you want to talk about the show you did?
Oh yeah, iSurvivor on Wondery. Yeah, that was one of the most eye-opening experiences of my life because we would have survivors of a whole swath of people who have survived different things. People who survived tragic accidents. One woman survived a plane crash. Another one like rode a ATV off a cliff in Mexico, like people who have survived incestuous stuff with like family abuse, stuff like, and I was blown away every single time that there's like common threads, how we're hardwired biologically to survive, how no matter what flavor of the trauma is, we go into this place in our brains where we can survive. Like you almost kind of block out certain things and just do what needs to be done right then. Like I remember when I realized that I needed to get out of my first marriage, I remember I lied. I told him, I was like, I'm going to go for a run. And I remember I didn't cry about it until like 2 weeks later. Like I didn't, no tears came because my body went into survival mode where I was like, you have to find a way to get away from this guy. He's way bigger than you. He's going to try to kill you if you leave. And I remember after I was safely away from him, feeling this like rush of relief, finally tears came because I was no longer in survivor mode. And that was a thing that was so cool to witness in talking to this medley of survivors. I think we did maybe like 40 or so episodes, and it's worth a listen because they're all so fascinating that we as humans are really hardwired to withstand a lot of really messed up stuff. It can either break you, which is understandable if it does, but overwhelmingly people know that they either deserve better or that there could be better or that there's like a hope for something beyond this situation. It's so inspiring.
Well, you did some fascinating work with that show. And I think it's just interesting because you have gone through, again, your own survival journey in so many aspects with your past relationship. And I'm sure other things in your life that have dictated that fight or flight response mm-hmm. in so many ways. I found out that you actually have a huge fan for your future books. Her name is Haley Gray. And she grew up reading the kind of books that hopefully soon you're going to be writing. So meet your fan club president, Haley Gray.
Such an honor. When I was a teenager, I was just obsessed with the idea of like the perfect love. And, you know, growing up with Disney movies and everything always works out in the end, and just so obsessed with those things. And I wish I could remember the author of the books, but she would write these like paperback novels, and they all had the same type of cover, you know, but it would be like a teen girl goes with her family to a ski lodge and she meets this like lovely guy and they fall in love. And, you know, it's a teen book, so it doesn't get raunchy like you were saying earlier, but like enough for you to be like, ooh. And I remember there was, I think, like a cruise ship one, and I would get every single one of those books. My mom would take me to Barnes & Noble. I'd be like, I need the new one. And I was just so obsessed with that idea of true love and what that looks like and that magical moment of seeing somebody that you're attracted to and just loving them so much. And yeah, I think that stuff is just so great. And you were speaking to this earlier with the Hallmark movies. They're so comforting because you know it's all going to be okay in the end. And that's so nice, especially in, you know, today's world where everything is kind of scary and you don't know if everything's going to be okay. And some people in relationships don't know that they're going to end up being okay or things like that. But you're safe with Hallmark movies or with these romance novels. You know what's going to happen. And it's just so comforting.
You're exactly right. You know, in those open scenes, you're like, I know exactly where this is going. And you're right. That's why we love them, because real life is not like that. It's just not. And the older I get, I remember I had this conversation with the man I'm currently seeing when we're like, let's do this. Like, let's figure it out. And the older I get, I think it's finding the person you want to figure it out with. Can you have those conversations? Like, do I want to figure it out with this guy, no matter what comes at me in my own world, with him in his own? And that's, I think, back to your thing about what advice, I think that's what I would say. I would say, younger Jenna, find the partner that you really can be in the weeds with, who you want to figure it out with, instead of just what looks good on paper or, oh, we have fun. I used to really dictate a lot of my relationships by who's the most fun.
Who's the most popular guy in this room? You? We're going to date.
I'm like, okay, great. Let's go.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Yeah. And so, and he's very fun, which is great. But I'm like, my husband was not someone that I could figure it out with. Mm. That was not a person who I could figure it out with, because he was so damaged and so abused.
Well, you know, it's interesting because you can share something about what a person does, what their career choice is, right? And it kind of dictates in one's head what their personality is like, or what their capabilities for things like, let's be fair, wildlife photographer, adventurous, travel, mm-hmm. someone who appreciates nature. Who can deny mm-hmm. that? You know what I'm saying? In terms of that. So you have a combination of somebody who's got a stable position, someone who's artistic, someone who enjoys adventure, but through the protection of a lens, in a way. You know what I'm saying?
I'm writing this down. Yeah, like,
well, for you know that's going to become another movie. I hope you know this.
I'll name him Jake. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Please do name him Jake. Yeah, that'd be great. You can take full credit for that. But this is kind of the DNA. I consider this less of a follow-up episode, more of a development meeting right now. So
what's funny with this guy, we met online. We met on the apps. Yeah. And it was genuinely because I sold a Hallmark movie. It was around Valentine's Day. It was The Love on Lookout Lake, the one that's going to be up.
I remember that, yeah.
And I had this visceral feeling. I was single at the time. And I was like, you know, I need to feel what it feels like to have sparks with someone if I'm going to write this movie. And I joined a dating app. I'm dead serious. Because I was like, I need to go on some dates and remember what that feels like to have that like excitement, you know, mm-hmm. be excited about somebody. And I think I was home alone at the time. I was making a Greek salad and I couldn't open the jar of capers. Dead serious. And I was like, okay, I need someone who can open jars for me. So I just pull up a dating app and I made a joke. I was like, this is what I do. You know, I'm a comedian, whatever. I'm here because I sometimes need backup opening jars. And then I start my profile. This guy
he sees that and he makes a joke about it on the app. He's like, I can open jars for you. Do you want to come to Chicago? And I was like, okay. So sure enough, that's how we met. It was very Hallmarky in that way. I remember the first time I couldn't open a jar. We were at his ranch in Montana and his adult son was in the kitchen with us. And I looked at him and I walked from the pantry and I handed him a jar. And we had this sweet moment where we're like, oh yeah, this is why we met. Cause I need you to open, I need a man to open jars for. Because in my opinion, that's what they're good for. You know, I was like, I have everything else going
girl,
on.
You said it.
I was like, sometimes I need a guy to open a jar. Like, as so antiquated as that is, like, yeah, it's true. And so we had this sweet moment and someone was like, what's going on? And we're like, I was like, I'm sorry. So it's, a Hallmark is all around us. It's so cheesy and sweet, but it like, I just like want that in my own life. There's part of me that just believes it can be that simple, even when it's not.
Well, you have that and you have this undeniable spirit and positivity about you. Like even when we were talking the first time for your story on Loveless Fear, you expressed it with such candor and also such diffusing nature that allowed someone to ingest some of the horrible things that you went through. But I think that your optimism and your spirit is what keeps you going. And it also, I think, really speaks to volumes of how you were raised and ultimately who you are as a person.
Thank you for saying that. Thank you. It's harder than I think I let on. It was so hard. And I remember worrying that, for example, anytime I get into a new relationship, because it's been 12 years since that happened, I remember part of me is like, I don't really want to have to tell him about this. I don't know if it's like a element of shame or embarrassment, but it's more kind of like, I have to open this wound.
Yeah.
And that's generally what it feels like. And I remember not telling him for months. I remember that episode dropped the day of our first date. And I remember being like, oh man, if this goes well, I'm going to have to tell this guy mm-hmm. that I got married in Vegas to a nutbag. And, but luckily, I mean, he took it well. He's someone who's like lived a life and is very understanding and non-judgmental in that way. But that was always a thing, a wound that I don't love reopening, but I don't feel shame about it. I don't. I think that was what at first made it really, really hard to write about it and talk about it after it happened. But then it's so common. People all over the world reach out with similar situations or they're like, I sent this to my sister because I think she's in that. There's just no taboo. There's still so much taboo around finding yourself in a relationship that you don't want to be in anymore and feeling really stuck. It's heartbreaking, really. I believe in my heart of hearts so much that I want that Hallmark happy ending as possible. I really want it, you know? And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to just put myself out there and keep my career, keep my stuff going on. And I think that's something that has been really great is that I have my own creative outlets. I have my work and that I didn't stop doing that. And finding a partner who I can do that around, who really makes it easy for me to continue being myself and do the stuff that brings me such joy.
That's so important.
You guys are so sweet. Thank you for all that because it's tough. It's hard.
You mentioned this before, is like it's easy for people to judge us by our highlight reel.
Yeah.
They go through the bullet points, okay? You just said this, okay? What are the bullet points about past relationship? Married a chef, went to Vegas, 90-day fiance, turned, like mm-hmm. you can kind of pinpoint, but what our friends and hopefully our family and other people in our lives do is they spend more time with the minutiae, the details, the motivations behind why we made these decisions. And that was part of the reason to do Loveless Fear. And I'm so glad you did join and share your story and you felt comfortable enough to do so because it's about getting the understanding and hopefully removing the judgment to really understand how you at the time in your life made the decisions that led to these things because so many people armchair quarterback it and you really don't know until you're walking in someone else's shoes how this could turn out. You really don't. Everybody assumes they can make the decision and they're always like, well, based on the information you have now by listening to the story, she didn't have at that time.
You're so right. It is like, and I remember when we talked before too, that I'd always dated comedians. Again, going yep. back, like I think every boyfriend I've had, I've like went through UCP. And it's just so weird to think about now. But I remember he was so different and exotic. And I remember that being something that I was attracted to. Like I remember, oh, a chef. okay, this is so different. He's not in comedy. He doesn't do the same things I do. How fun. And that's something that I told myself. And I think that's something that is really seductive, that can be enchanting, is something that's wild and different. And of course, it went sideways doing something like that. But I think, I'm not alone. I'm not alone in experiencing that kind of situation.
Well, other than becoming an author and having your fan club president on this session, what's next for Jenna?
What's next is more Hallmark movies. I'm finishing up one now. It's going to shoot this summer. I'm really on this bender of wine country. I love wine country movies, and probably another Christmas one, but it's going to be a Christmas at the ranch inspired by Montana. And to be honest, I think I'm just going to keep doing Hallmark movies.
That's great.
Yeah, because they are so joyful and I love it. And I think this is so weird that I've worked into this niche where it's really the only thing I'm good at. Where I'm like, oh gosh, I guess I'll just keep doing this because they keep making them and there's no lack of desire for this genre. And I think that's something that's really exciting and that no one really saw coming. I don't think anyone in the industry saw that, oh, there were some of the first movies to keep shooting after the lockdown was lifted. It was Hallmark and Lifetime because they're small crews, people want to work. And like you said, being in Kansas City, like they find these other pockets of the country that are really small town. Like, can you be more like Hallmarky? That's so cute. Yeah, there's no lack for them. And I think it also is just like what keeps me sane, living in this mental fantasy land that it's all gonna just work out. So that's what's up for me. I'm just going to keep doing it.
I'm super excited about this ranch Hallmark movie because I was thinking there's like such a love out there for like a guy in a cowboy hat, like riding a horse. Oh. And just like this, you know, you're kind of secluded out there on this ranch. It's like a fireplace, cozy, you know?
I mean,
what a dream.
Somebody's got fantasies.
It is so dreamy. The small town that his ranch is in, there's only one restaurant. It's called the Hitchin' Post. I'm like, can you be more Hallmark? Yeah, the simplicity of it. It's great. It's very sexy. I agree with you. Cowboys are so sexy, especially after Yellowstone. Yeah, they're shooting a bunch.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, that's going to be a big play, you know, into that. And yeah, anything with a fireplace, they're like sitting down in front of the fireplace and flirting with like a cozy blanket. You're like, ugh. What a dream.
Yes, it really is like the restraint. I think there's something also so sexy and alluring about Hallmark is because there's just, they can't hold hands. Also, I remember I got a call from a producer like, you got to take out the handhold at page 60. I was like, oh, they're like, no, it's they meet and then they are engaged at the end. And that's when they have their first kiss. By the time they're in love, they don't kiss. Have you noticed that in Hallmark movies? At the end when they kiss, they are already like, we are doing this. You
know, we're like, together forever.
Not real life at all. At least not my experience. It'd be inverted. But yeah, it's the chase. Like you were saying about those novels that you read, you know, it's like wholesome and there's like longing and wanting to touch each other, you know? And I always, I love writing that moment in my scripts where like he ties her apron on and it's like, oh my God, it's like erotic, you know? Because you're like, like they reach for the same cookie. I have that in this one. They reach for the same cookie and their hands touch. And it's like, oh, you know, you can make a meal out of it. You know, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And that's what's so fun about Hallmark too. Like they want the same thing, but different. You probably heard that, like give us the same, but a little different. And I'm like, you can just really plug and play so many different things. But at the end of the day, you know, these two people are going to find love and never fight and have no conflict. And I'm like, oh, yes, please. Let me live in here in my brain forever.
Thank you for joining Jenna, Haley, and I on Loveless Fridays. If you have a dating or relationship story to share or want to participate in a discussion here on Loveless Fridays, DM me on Instagram at @LovelessFearPod or email me at lovelessfearpod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, sharing, and supporting. Links to guest social media and some content mentioned are in our show notes. If you know someone who's being abused by a partner, there is help available. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. The National Domestic Violence Hotline provides essential tools and support to help survivors of domestic violence so they can live their lives free of abuse. Call 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233 or text START to 88788.